the readers today set up a contrast between King Solomon in the first reading and a unnamed pagan woman in the gospel. And maybe it shouldn't surprise us, but it does, that King Solomon turns out to be the bad guy, and this pagan woman turns out to be a woman of great faith, exactly the opposite of what we would expect. But this happens a lot in the scriptures, although it's the liturgy that's putting these two together, but we find this in different passages in the Bible. One that came to my mind and is very familiar to you, I'm sure, is the contrast between King Herod at the time of Jesus' birth and the Magi. King Herod was king of the Jews. He was right there in Jerusalem, not very far from Bethlehem. The Magi were pagans from a far-off land, and the Magi are the ones who had the faith to come and find the Lord, and Herod turned his heart against him. So a kind of contrast comes up today as well. So let's start with King Solomon. Remember, Solomon was the man who was gifted with extraordinary wisdom. He asked the Lord for wisdom, and the Lord gave him great wisdom. In fact, the reading the other day said that there's never been a man as wise as Solomon, the wisest man ever. Now, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it shows the esteem with which his wisdom was held. And Jesus himself uses Solomon as an example of wisdom when he points to himself and says, "You have a greater than Solomon here." In yesterday's reading, the queen of the south, Queen of Sheba, came to Solomon because she had heard he was wise, and she said, you're even greater than I had heard. Your reputation isn't nearly as great as the actual experience of hearing your wisdom. So Solomon was a very wise man. Usually, people grow in wisdom as they age. Since I'm always talking to older crowd, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Wisdom usually, almost always in fact, grows with age. But in Solomon's case, no. He becomes foolish as he grows older. What happened? It says here that when Solomon was old, his wives had turned his heart to strange gods, and his heart was not entirely with the Lord his God, as the heart of his father David had been. So it blames the wives, but in fact can't blame the wives. It's Solomon's own fault. They didn't turn his heart. They just tempted him or presented him with some appealing alternative, or what was appealing to them anyway. Solomon bears the responsibility for his own foolishness, not his wives. They were pagans anyway. They followed false gods, and they didn't know they were false. Solomon knew. If anything, he should have converted his wives to faith in the one true God, the God of Israel. He was the wisest man of all. Could he not influence his own wives to appreciate his wisdom and follow his religion? Something went wrong very early on. So it says here that because his wives were doing it, he decided to offer worship to these different gods, Astarte, Milcom, Chemosh, and Molech, which are the names of pagan gods from the regions around the Holy Land, but are traditionally identified as names of demons. Because what are pagan gods anyway? What are pagan gods? Yes, they're idols, and perhaps in some cases they were simply images, but in almost every case, behind that image is the influence of an evil spirit, because idols are, the idea of idolatry is provoked by evil spirits. Evil spirits love to be worshipped. Anyway, it mentions all these evil spirits, these idols, and it indicates that Solomon's heart had deviated from the Lord. The problem was in his own heart. You might remember what we heard in yesterday's gospel when Jesus said, things from outside are not what defile us. What comes from the heart is what defiles us. So what came from outside was the influence of his wives. His wives did not defile him. He defiled himself by his choice to turn away from the true God, whom he knew, whom he had met. In fact, he had seen him twice in visions. He turned away from the true God and turned to these false gods. Very, very foolish. We could understand God giving a punishment for this foolishness, but notice how the punishment is described. The Lord said to Solomon, since this is what you want, this is what you want. In other words, it's not that God has to punish us when we sin. We choose our own punishment. We choose our own exile from God when we choose to sin. It's not God's anger that comes down, crashing down on us. We're foolish enough to turn away from his protection and his grace and his mercy, and then we get what we want, or we could say we get what we choose. And that's what happens. You don't want to follow me, if you don't want the kingdom that I offer you, well, then you're going to lose it. And actually, we skipped over the story of Solomon's reign for the most part. Solomon, even though he was very wise, he was not a very good king. He became a tyrant. He became an oppressive ruler. And it was his own bad domestic policy that moved the people to reject him. That's why there was an uprising against him. It was really his own fault, because he was so demanding, such high taxes, so much oppression of his own people, that they ended up turning against him. And you see this happening all the time, right? Throughout history and in our own times, once people get power, once leaders get power, and if they start to take that power, it goes to their heads, and they start to dominate in oppressive ways, their own people are the ones who reject them. And then the tyrants or the dictators, what they do is, oh, my people are starting to be rebellious, so I'm going to repress them. Of course, it gets worse and worse. The more a leader oppresses his people instead of serving them as a shepherd, the more they reject him. And the more they reject him, the more he feels like he has to control them until the thing blows up. Well, what happened with Solomon was 10 of the tribes were removed. That's the tradition. The northern tribes, the northern kingdom, was removed from him. And only one tribe was left, the tribe of Judah. So that's Solomon, foolishness. Let's turn to the gospel and learn some wisdom. Oh, before that, I wanted to read this little passage from Galatians. It shows this dynamic that we see in Solomon is not exclusive to him. This is a passage from Galatians chapter 4. It happened to be in today's office of readings. But this is now St. Paul talking to the Galatians. The Galatians were pagans before they came to Christianity. They didn't have a Jewish heritage. They were pagans, so they followed the same false gods, maybe not exactly the same ones, but similar pagan idols. And then Paul proclaimed the gospel to them, and they converted to Christianity. And then when they learned about the Jewish law, they started to think, well, maybe Paul didn't tell us the whole story. Maybe we're supposed to be following the Jewish law and follow the practice of circumcision and the different dietary rules. And Paul, throughout the letter to the Galatians, saying to them, you're being foolish here. You're being foolish. This is the passage that struck me this morning. He's speaking to the Galatians now. In the past, when you did not acknowledge God, you served as slaves to gods who are not really divine. He's talking about their pagan background. Before, you were slaves. Now that you have come to know God, or rather have been known by him, that's their conversion to Christianity, how can you return to those powerless, worthless, natural elements to which you seem willing to enslave yourselves once more? How could you possibly go back to that foolishness once you have the wisdom of the Lord? You even go so far as to keep ceremonial observances, etc., etc. So Paul is saying, what can I do with you? I'm at a loss of words for you. How can anyone be so foolish? And he says that to the Galatians in different places. How can you be so stupid to forsake wisdom to go after foolishness? I'm just pointing this out because the same thing that happened to Solomon, not exactly the same thing, but a similar pattern, forsaking the wisdom of following the true God and true religion for anything else That's foolishness. And we see that foolishness in the Galatians, and Paul reacts very strongly to it. Galatians chapter 4 in this case. Okay. Enough foolishness. Let's turn to some wisdom. The Syrophoenician woman whose daughter is possessed or is afflicted by an unclean spirit or a demon. So Jesus is in pagan territory here. This is as far north as he goes, as far as we know from the Gospels. That's as far away from Jerusalem as he ever went. It was up in Tyre. It's a district, not a Jewish district. Why he went up there? I don't know. Maybe it was for this woman's sake. It says he didn't want to be noticed. But, of course, word spread, even to the pagans, that this man has power to cure and to drive out evil spirits. So this woman finds out that he's in town and comes and falls before him. She probably belonged to one of these religions that Solomon was supporting. Maybe she worshipped Astarte or Milcom or Chemosh or Molech, but whoever her gods were, they weren't helping her, and they weren't helping her daughter. So she turns to Jesus with great humility and great faith, begging him to drive out the demon. Beautiful. She's better than Solomon already. Now, then comes this test when Jesus says to her, well, let the children be fed first. It's not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. I mean, this is always a very offensive thing to say. The children are the Israelites, or the children, the Jews. And the dogs are the pagans. So she's a dog. And so the blatant interpretation of this is, I'm here to help the Jews, not you. Now, it sounds very offensive to us, but it might not have sounded that offensive to her, because that was the language of the time. And it's a little hard for us to get into the culture of the time and understand words the way they were meant at the time. I mean, it's certainly a cultural slur, but the fact that Jesus uses it, maybe, and he says it actually in a diminutive way. Puppies really is the better translation. It'll give it to the puppies. I remember when I first came to the Philippines, actually before I came to the Philippines, a Filipino woman went to the States with an image of Our Lady of Manawag. It was a pilgrim image of Our Lady of Manawag. And her name was Baby. And in the United States, Baby is not a name. You would never call a grown woman, a professional woman with a ministry, you would never call her Baby. And maybe a man might call his lover Baby, or you call a very small child a baby. But so it sounded so strange. I was like, well, how could they keep calling this woman Baby? Now, of course, when I got to the Philippines, I realized that's a very common name, very common nickname. Maybe there's some babies here. Any babies? No? We have baby and boy. Yeah, we have babies in the community. Yeah. And boy, very common name. Doesn't even strike me anymore. Doesn't even seem strange to me anymore. But at the time, I'm telling you, it sounded really insulting. So I was the one in the wrong. Well, maybe this description of the woman as a dog, maybe it didn't sound that bad to her. I mean, that's what Jews called the pagans. So it was just a nickname. I don't know. But the point is, she doesn't take the insult. In fact, she doesn't even, she uses the insult to make it a claim to have a right to get a blessing. And this is the beauty of the woman. Even the dogs under the table eat the children's scraps. As if to say, sure, I'm not asking for you to deprive anybody else. Even a scrap is enough to help my daughter. So it's a very humble position, right? I'm not demanding anything. I'm not even making anything difficult for you. Just the tassel of your cloak, right? Just the scrap, just a little bit is enough. That's how much my faith in you, how great my faith in you is. You don't have to do anything great. Just your little finger. Just drive out the demon. See how great that faith is, and how that what seems like an insult did not stop her at all from humbly presenting herself to Jesus. And Jesus is impressed for saying this, you may go. In other words, you express such great humility and such great faith that you open such a great space that the demon is already driven out, as if it was her statement that drove out the demon. He didn't even do anything. The demon is already gone. Humility and faith make it possible for God to do great things. It's a great example for all of us. We don't have to get caught up in what people think about us or how people talk about us or how we might feel insulted. That's insignificant. It doesn't mean anything. What's important is what God thinks of us and that we allow God to be God in our lives so that he can do great things. Anything else is just a footnote, just an insignificant detail. If someone calls you a dog, so what? What does God call you? Huh? My beloved, my child, my loved one. Okay, so this is the great story of the woman. Don't be like Solomon in his foolishness, who puts importance on what his wives think and what his wives worship and how he can gain power and how he can manipulate. Don't be like Solomon. Be like this humble woman. We don't even know her name, but we know her greatness because she's an example of humble faith.